All right, my name is Sean Fallon, and you're listening to episode 8, Friday Night Lights. Welcome to From First to Last.
No one told you. Maybe I hear the blues are calling, toss.
Hello again and welcome again. My name is Sean Fallon. This is From First to Last. Welcome to episode 8. My guest today, he's a writer, he's a teacher, he's a rogue, a scoundrel, a gentleman and a scholar. He is John Robertino Dugan. Hello John, how are you today?
I'm quite good. Robertino, that's not one I've heard before, but thank you.
I'm pretty sure that's not a real name. I think I may have just come up with that straight away in a pre-dawn bit of mania.
Strangely, it fits, I find.
Yeah, it's good. I think it definitely works for you.
Yeah.
John, what show did you choose for us today?
So I chose what is probably maybe not the best show I've ever seen, but certainly my favorite, Friday Night Lights.
Okay, interesting. I think this is a bit of a weird one in terms of this podcast, because this is the first one that I had never seen anything.
That was part of the reason that I chose it. I knew that you had not seen anything, and I really wanted to get your take on a bunch of different things that we'll talk about throughout, but there were some specific things that I was interested in hearing your side and in hearing what you had to say about a show you'd never seen anything of, and then you saw the first and the last.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, well, what's your experience of Friday Night Lights? How did, like, you come to it?
So I actually have a really long experience. I read the original book, the book by Buzz Bissinger. I read that when I was in high school because it was about a high school football team, and I was playing high school football. And so I read that, 15, 16 years ago, and I loved it. I was obsessed with it. And then when they made the movie of it was 2004 or something, I saw that in the theater opening weekend, because I was super excited about that. So I loved the movie as well. And when they decided to make it into a TV show as well, I was in from the get-go. I watched every episode as it aired live.
Wow, that's nuts. Well, yeah. It's interesting because I think, I don't know if it was me and you had this conversation, but like, Friday Night Lights, I always thought the movie of that was Varsity Blues.
You know,
the,
oh, really?
James Van Der Beek, I think it's John Voight, the Ali Larter in the cream bikini situation.
The whipped cream bikini, yeah, and Amy Smart's in that one. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know that one.
So I think they may have come out around the same time, but I don't think they did. I think, actually, no, I looked into this. Varsity Blues is like late 90s.
It's like 98. I actually remember that because, so I had read the book right before that movie came out.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember seeing that movie and being like, oh, they took this straight from Friday Night Lights. Oh, this is Friday Night Lights. But they clearly tried to like sex it up as much as possible.
Yeah, no, I just remember that. I never actually saw Varsity Blues, but I remember it being like, being a teenager and that trailer being on constantly. And just always seeing this girl in a cream bikini, and then, like, I think John Voight gets arrested in the trailer, and James Van Der Beek is, like, leading the team.
I don't want your life.
Yeah, that's it, that's exactly it. And just, like, watching that trailer and being like, I will make a blood pact today. I will never see that film. So then, when obviously later on I thought that was Friday Night Lights, I'm like, oh, fuck this thing, I have no interest in this at all. And then would later sort of realign my thoughts. But
It was clear that they made Varsity Blues thinking like, we want that Friday Night Light shine, but we want to give it, you know, we want high schoolers who will actually want to go see this thing. So we're going to put some nudity in there. We're going to put some sex in there. And it, because it came out before the movie of Friday Night Lights, because Varsity Blues came out first, it kind of stole a little bit of that thunder, I thought.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so, because, well, obviously for me, they just merged into one movie.
Yeah, especially outside the U.S., I can't imagine someone seeing two different high school football movies about Central Texas involving the star quarterback getting injured and not think, how are these different? These are exactly the same thing. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, yeah, that is definitely going to be a thing that comes up as well with watching, like, American football stuff in England. Like, it's very much it's sort of a, it's very foreign. to us. You know, it is this sort of idea. Because, I mean, it's a lot of smugness and sort of pompousness on the English side of being like, oh, well, this isn't one of our sports. Why should we watch it? We wouldn't understand this futuristic rugby.
Yeah, this sport where they wear pads and can only throw the ball forward when they're behind. Like, yeah, it's bizarre. I totally understand that.
But then, we'll come to that. We'll come back into that, I think a bit more later.
I've got thoughts on actual football in Friday Night Lights, believe me.
Perfect. Okay, well, cool. Actually, I skipped a bit.
Yeah.
In terms of Friday Night Lights, the numbers ran for 76 episodes and ran from October 2006 to February 2011. That is the thing I always forget to say on this podcast. I'm supposed to ask you what show and then say the numbers, but as soon as I ask the person what the show is, I just want to get talking about the show and I skip the facts. So
no, I get into that, so yeah, I understand.
Okay, so what did you think, like, rewatching the first episode, what were your thoughts?
Well, actually, I'm interested, as someone who had never seen it before, I want to hear your thoughts first, just about just general overall, because I've got some takes and I've got some hot takes, but I'm, as someone who had never seen it before, I'm really interested in your takeaway from it.
I really enjoyed it. It was interesting because like watching it, it was something that felt brand new. Like, the way that it was depicted, like, I had an idea in my head of what the show was going to be, and it just wasn't that at all. Like, it was all very, you know, handheld cameras, constantly moving, dirty, gritty. I always sort of had it in my head it was going to be quite... Because when you think of stuff, okay, so it's sports and it's high school, traditionally you think, okay, it's going to be quite glitzy, quite glamorous, quite flash, you know, nothing, it's all very low key. Even the characters, like, you know, the coach who's the main character is quite sort of a subdued, quiet character, you know, and you're sort of used to, I was expecting more like bombast, and it was good that it didn't have that.
Yeah, and actually you say that about the coach, and there are some things about the show that I rewatched that first episode, and I was like, oh, okay, they cleaned this up as time went on. They figured out how to you know, make this work a lot better. Mm-hmm. But the coach, Kyle Chandler, is locked in from minute one. He is so on it and so, like, owns that character from that moment. I'll never be able to see anything he's in again without just calling him coach. He's not, you know, Kyle Chandler to me. He's just coach. And you his, like, quiet authority is, like, so apparent right from the beginning.
Yeah, like you said, quiet authority, that sort of idea of just pure, like, bottled presence. You know, there's not a sense of like, oh, he needs to threaten people or he needs to do this. Like, from the start, I mean, because the show is very, it's almost cynical, its opening, in sort of like, because I had a look, like, the first 7 minutes was very, like, before the titles appeared, it was just basically like, okay, this is the town, you know, cars driving through the town, showing all the thing. And then just to sort of be like, okay, let's just have news interviews that just introduce each character and their conflict.
Oh, no, I was going to say, it's almost kind of clunky the way they do that, just to be like, oh, here's the big, you know, dump of information, the big characterization dump right at the beginning.
Yeah,
just to kind of say, okay, here's everything. It's almost kind of clunky, and we'll get to this more when we talk about the finale, but the way they did it later on, I thought was way more effective. So seeing that right off the bat, I was like, okay, I see where you're coming from, but it lost a little bit of the power that I thought it had right off the bat when I was remembering it.
Well, actually, I thought it was, like you say, it was quite clunky. It was sort of like, this is what's happening, but it wasn't, I think the idea was clunky, but the execution was pretty good. Like, it was just sort of, I do like it sometimes when a TV show does that and just sort of says, okay, rather than having 45 minutes of intros, let's just get it all on you now, and then we can just start running the plot, and we'll, yeah, you can pick up the finer details as we go, but you just need to know that this guy hates this guy, this guy's the star quarterback, this guy's the second string quarterback, this is the coach, and this is sort of the town, and then we'll be a bit more, we'll have a bit more finesse later. But for now, just to get you in and get you watching, just have this.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I think that what you just said about the execution making up for some clunky ideas or clunky dialogue. That's almost like a mission statement for the series. Mm. It's like there are some very cliched things and cliched, you know, plot movements that they had throughout the life of the series that were elevated to this level above almost anything else on TV just because of the execution.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting one. Like, I didn't do like tons of research into this because I didn't want to like spoil myself, but I sort of just had a little bit of a sniff around. And it's very much, it seems like one of those fascinating shows that like critics absolutely loved, but it was on the bubble for cancellation every single season.
Yeah.
And there's so many shows like that where you're just like, this is amazing. Why don't people watch it more? Like, last week we recorded News Radio, mm-hmm. and that was very much the same thing, like a fantastic show that just critics loved, fans loved, but the general populace were like, nah, we've got Friends, we're happy, we don't need another sitcom, you know, and then just struggled all the way, and then just, you know, again, 5 seasons, I think, and it got to a certain point, and then in the end it was just like, oh, let's just kill it off.
Yeah,
and it's a shame, like, I mean, a recent example of that is Hannibal. Everyone loves Hannibal, but no bastard watched it. And it's like, no, this show should run for 10 years and just, there's so much stuff going on. And you're like, no, well, why make that when you can make more fucking Big Bang Theory or, you know, stuff like that that just people mindlessly watch and just, it just frustrates me because it's happening more and more with this podcast, like looking at different TV shows and being like, no, this is really good. So why is it always, oh yeah, this show is amazing. Unfortunately, it was canceled, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that happens all the time. And actually, I have some, so I did do a little research about the ratings and I wanted to get your take. Now, you start watching a show called Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
In your mind, what day of the week would you imagine it should air on?
Actually, this is a trick question, but I would say Friday.
Okay, yeah, that was what everyone suggested. Everyone thought it was, oh, it's Friday Night Lights, must be on Friday. No, started its first season on Tuesday nights.
See, that... Because the thing is, Tuesday's not really a TV... Well, yeah, it's... Because from sort of, like, looking at, like, trends and stuff, it tends to be... Again, you know, this is a weekend show. It's sport.
Yeah, exactly. And the thought process from the studio people was, well, if we can't put it on Friday night because it's about high school football, and people who like high school football will be at high school football games on Friday nights, so they won't watch this show. Not understanding that the people who are going to be watching this show are not high school football fans. It's not like a show for people who are big fans of high school football. Mm. It's a show for people who are huge fans of like drama and huge fans of character. And, you know, there was a feeling as it was, you know, coming out and there were these terrible ratings that it wasn't getting checked out by men because they weren't interested in a high school show. They thought high school shows had this what do you call it?
Stigma
of being girly shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and My So-Called Life,
OC.
One Tree Hill, all that stuff. So men didn't want to watch the show because they thought it was about high schoolers. But then women didn't want to watch the show because it was about football.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. Like it is that unfortunate thing of like having to skirt between your audiences and just being like, if they just watched it, they'd have worked it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And there were times where it started to like towards the end of the series, like once it had a steady viewership, they realized, oh, these people are going to keep watching no matter what. And you know, the final 2 seasons, it was a 2-season renewal. So they didn't have to worry about it knowing, they knew when they were going to be able to end the show. So they had 2 seasons to build that in.
Oh, that's good. I mean, that's all you can really hope for sometimes with stuff like this, when it's like a good show that just can't find its audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think as well, one thing that it sort of would suffer from is, like I was saying before, like a sort of lack of an international audience. You know, I don't really know anyone who isn't American. I can imagine this being a show that, say, if I lived in England, I'd stumble upon it and I'd watch it and I'd really enjoy it, but I couldn't sell it to my friends. You know, it wouldn't, I'd say, like, oh, it's this and this and this. I mean, it's about American football, and you just see just shades over their eyes. They just be like, nope.
Yeah, just that fact right there, that it's about this sport that a very small percentage of, not even the world, but America, a very small percentage of people actually have a true investment in. Now, granted, it's the most popular sport in America, but even so, I mean, you're not going to get that many people who are interested in high school football. So right off the bat, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to write it off, not knowing that going into it, it's got this rich, football is bait. Like it's kind of a misnomer. It's not really about football. It's about a town, and it's about people. And it's like the fact that it involves football is almost incidental. It's just a way to bring these characters together.
Yeah, I mean, because it's that sort of thing as well. Like you'd say to someone, "Oh, do you want to watch Friday Night Lights?" "Oh, well, it's about football. I don't know anything about football." "Right? Do you know anything about cooking meth? Do you know anything about running a parks department?" "No." "Do you watch 30 Rock? Do you watch Breaking Bad?" You know, it's. It's like, and you don't need to know anything about meth production, because it's not, you know, that is the, that's the color, you know, it's not the content.
Yeah, and speaking, as someone, you know, you don't, I mean, you might know the basic rules of football, but watching that first episode, when they had that big game at the end, did any of that make sense to you? Did it come across what was happening or what the big deal was?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing though, isn't it? Like a good sports program or good sports like media, you don't need to know, because it'll subtly push you in the ways to the point where you're like, it doesn't matter, because the only thing that's going to matter is that last point. And all you need to know is by this thing is like, okay, all we need to know is the Panthers need to score a touchdown. And a touchdown means the ball has to be here, and you can understand that. And it's also very well directed. Like, not knowing anything about football, I was never confused in that final scene. I was like, oh, I know exactly where the ball is at all times. I know, it's actually impressive. Like, the players are obviously completely covered up, but obviously they've just got their little stickers with their names on the helmets.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, the show has put itself together so well that I know all the characters' surnames and I know which character's which. Which is quite impressive, because it would be very easy to be in that scene and like hear characters talk and be like, I think that's Street, but it might be Riggins. I don't be like, no, that guy there's Street, I know Street is the quarterback, he's this. That's Riggins, I know this. You know, it was very clear, and even not knowing anything really about football, there was never a point where I was like, yeah, but what's happening? I was like, no, that guy just needs to do this, and that guy's hit that guy, and that guy's fucked himself up, and if the ball goes from here to here and then there, they win. And to be honest,
yeah.
I was really, I've got in my notes, like, the structure of the show, by the time it got to Friday, like, I'm watching the TV show, and I was pumped up. I was like, oh, yeah, come on, let's be having it, like, you know, ready for the game. And then when, in my notes it just says, my heart was in my throat in those last seconds of the game, like as Saracen throws the ball, like I
just not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's it, because the thing is though, obviously you've just seen Street take a tumble, and then Saracen's like bollocksed up his first sort of go of being a quarterback.
Yeah.
And then when he's about to throw the ball, I was like, anything is going to happen here, because there's no precedent that they're definitely going to win. And it is a drama, so they might lose, to sort of set up the whole thing of like, oh shit, so they've lost the first game, so the rest of the plotline is going to be the coach trying to get his shit together, and he's got to make Saracen into a quarterback. It's like, or Saracen, they're going to win, and that's going to set the tone for like, okay, so now they're on a winning streak, so where do you go from there, and stuff like that. So when that ball was in the air, I was just like, my heart was pounding, and I was like, oh god, what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen? And again, incredible for, like you say, a sport I've never sat down and watched a game from beginning to end. Like, just how well it's directed by Peter Berg, of all people.
I know. And like, you look at some of the other things that he's done as a director, and I like some of the things he's done. I like Very Bad Things. I like the Friday Night Lights movie. I never saw Lone Survivor, but I imagine that's right up his alley, and yeah. I would like that a lot. And this is like so well, like you said, so well constructed. I mean, you were mentioning your heart's in your throat as you're watching that ball fly, and it's cutting back and forth between that and Street getting his helmet cut off
because
he's been paralyzed. It's like brutal. It's so well done, the way they kind of string those two things together and keep reminding you, yeah, you're excited about this game. This kid's never going to walk again.
Yeah, that's it. You know, they are it's interesting, like, visual language of, you know, they're cutting him out of the, you know, out of the football clothes. It's like, yeah. No, mate, you're this. If this was your chrysalis, you know, you're going to come out of that as something completely different to when you went into it, you know? And then at the same time, like you say, because you're sort of like, oh my God, the ball's in the air. And then it's like, and you see them like soaring the helmet off. And then you've got him on his back and they're drilling things into his spine. And you're like, oh shit, okay. And then again, like you say, that's very much a sort of mission statement for the show. You're just like, okay, I get this now. It's football and it's very, very real drama. And it's sort of that mix of like, okay, well, the football is essentially meaningless.
Yeah.
Whereas this poor kid whose whole life was that meaningless thing is now, you know, whatever's going to happen to him next, because I don't know what happens to him next.
Oh, yeah, you don't know. I mean, I can spoil that. He is paralyzed. That's the only spoiler I'll give you. But his story throughout the rest of the series, it's really interesting. I found myself when I was watching it at the time kind of being like, I'm kind of done with Street. I'm not really interested. But looking back, I'm like, the way they handle his story is really, really well done and really effective. And when he does come back towards the end of the series, it's a very, you know, effective moment. You get to see what's become of him as he's gone on, and so taking this, you know, horrible moment in the initial, you know, in the pilot, and moving that all the way to a point where you can see him having this normal non-football related life is a really impressive thing that the show was able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, in my notes I just had that quarterback is going to get killed, because like, I was like, something's happening to this kid. I was like, you've got Saracen there, you've got that this kid is full of hopes and dreams, okay, I can see. But even then, knowing that it was only a matter of time before the hammer fell, when it did happen, as it was building up and I knew it was about to happen, I was like, oh, I hope this doesn't happen. And then I was like, crunch, and that was it. Like,
yeah, I mean, one thing is that this show really, it parceled out its happy endings very, very judiciously.
Yeah.
It was very, you know, it was at times an extremely difficult show to watch because it put you through the emotional ringer. And I'm taking that quote directly from Alan Sepinwall, who put it in his book, The Revolution Was Televised. It put you through the ringer. It was so emotionally difficult to watch that my wife, Katie, had to stop watching in the middle of the third season. She said, I can't watch this anymore.
Yeah.
It was too much for her. And so she never got to see where it ended. And she wasn't upset about that. She knew she was, you know, she was happy with what she had invested, but the emotional toll it took was too much. And I totally get that. That was another barrier to people kind of latching on to this show.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, because it's like the like watching that first episode, you could definitely see, like, I think going back to what I was saying about, you know, handheld cameras, washed out colors and all that. You can kind of see straight away, yeah, this show isn't going to have much like glitz and glamour. This is going to be gritty. Like, not gritty in the sense of like Batman versus Superman is gritty, but like actually getting stuck in your teeth, you know.
Yeah, something you have to deal with, and it stays with you for a long time.
Yeah. It's actually saying that about, like, obviously talking about Peter Berg and then talking about the handheld camera stuff. Like, part of the research I did come across was like, when they were producing the show, like having a thing of the actors got the scripts, but they never rehearsed. And then they were allowed to sort of interpret the dialogue, how they felt worked for them. And then,
yeah, they wanted to keep it as they wanted to make it, from what I read in Alan Sepinwall's book, they were trying to keep it as realistic and naturalistic as possible. And that by doing, because most of the actors were, complete unknowns. Yeah. A lot of them were brand new to acting. I mean, Taylor Kitsch had basically done almost nothing before this. He was a no-name Canadian actor, and they brought him down and kind of stuck him into this thing, and they were like, go for it, see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, between the no rehearsal, you know, the lighting, it was almost entirely natural lighting.
Yeah.
They wanted to capture those natural moments and adjust on the fly as things were happening.
Yeah, and it works, because it's when you do have stuff like that, it's almost like, I think I read this on AV Club, and it's like the idea that they aimed for like journalistic, you know, as if like it's, you're watching a documentary unfold, you're just like, you're in the room, but you're not allowed to speak, you're just sort of following people around. And I think that works quite well because it does remove that sort of sense of artifice, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you are there watching people. So when you've got that, you can, like you say, go for those harsher plot lines because you don't need to be all flash and action packed. You can be like, no, you're watching people have, like, you're watching people go through some shit, like, you know, so you can go, like, in terms of like writing and stuff, you can go for those darker plots.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned, you know, like a documentary. I hadn't even thought of this until now, but thank God they did not use the actual mockumentary trope of having the interviews with people. I know they had the news stuff at the very beginning, which was, you know, it's part of the story. It makes sense. But it would have taken away a lot of the power of the show over the years if they had had those talking heads throughout that they have in, you know, The Office and Parks and Rec. And I realize those are comedies, but it's kind of in the same naturalistic documentary-esque vein as those, and so I'm just thankful they didn't go that direction.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I think going for that sort of fly on the wall thing, like you're sort of a voyeur, just like watching them do their thing, it works. It adds, it definitely adds a few layers to it.
Yeah. Now we need to talk about Coach and Tammy because their relationship is basically the bedrock of the entire series. And so from the very beginning, did you get a sense of how strong their relationship was?
I did. It really cemented for me watching the final episode, but it was cool to sort of see. It definitely felt, I think I've used this expression a few times in the podcast, like lived in. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You're not watching two people who have just met. You're watching two people with a, what, 15, 16-year-old daughter. And I think as well, you know, for me, I'm always in, like, as someone who's not newly married, I've been married for 2 years, 3 years? Oh, Christ. Okay, we'll edit that bit out.
Three years. Take that out.
Is it 3 years? It doesn't matter. 3 years. But yeah, sometimes I do sort of find that interesting to watch a show and actually see a married couple, and you are sort of like, yeah, because when you sort of, you're single or you're in a relationship or you're growing up and you see like married couples on TV, and you are like, no, it's not like that. It's not like two people who are dating all the time. You know,
yeah.
It is it's two people who are living together and have to like run their own lives in tandem. And do all, and like, you know, plan their future constantly and all that. And it was very interesting, like, that whole scene where he's like on the couch watching the replay of the football game and the daughter's calling him like Captain Ahab, and Tammy's like cutting the his and hers closet thing out of the paper and sticking it to the fridge. And that sort of thing of like being in a household and there being like three conversations going on all at the same time, but no one's really listening to anyone.
Everyone's only paying attention to themselves. It seems like a real family.
Yeah, definitely, that's it. And it's sort of like, they're not hugely friendly to each other, and there's nothing very romantic about it. It's just like, yeah, this is how family works. You just have these people who live in your house, and, you know, they're the center of your world, but you don't need to treat them that way.
And they get in arguments, but it never seems like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Even in that finale, even when they're arguing and that, you know, it really is a life-changing argument that they're having.
Yeah.
They both are aware and, you know, they're invested in the fact that they're together no matter what. They don't ever feel like, I got to do this for me. It's like, no, they're a unit.
Yeah.
They're married. And that's like how it is in real life. You know, like people make sacrifices for each other. And it, from the very beginning, felt like this, you know, Taylor family had that going for them.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, let's jump up into that, the last episode.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Like you say, like that, because the guy luckily had a previously on Friday Night Lights, which sort of set up the conflict for me. And like you say, there was that thing when the coach comes home and he's saying to her, your daughter's got engaged, your daughter's done this and so on, and storms out. And she's like, why are you yelling at me? You know, and I was like, okay, that, I feel like that's very much a sort of, because there wasn't a sort of, and then that never came up again. It wasn't a thing like he had to come back to and apologize for losing his tempo. It was just sort of like, no, that's married stuff. Sometimes you just, that's how you talk to each other. Like, that's how you communicate. And no one's really angry. You just, you're the person you're most comfortable talking to in the world, so you can just sort of talk the way you want to talk. Like,
I know, and it was I love that line that she gives of, I think we're on the same side here. It's such a good line and such a good line reading, and it paints their, like, clear, like, in that moment they're still mad about other stuff, but they know that they're together and they know that they're on the same side, but there's this anger from other things. It's just, it's funny and real. I love that scene so much.
Yeah, I mean, well, that whole thing of the conflict of, do we move to Philadelphia, do we stay here, and it being like, what, like, I sort of put in my notes of, like, it's a very realistic conflict, and it's very realistically shown, and it lacks that sort of, for some reason, the first example that jumped into my head was How I Met Your Mother, which I think is that sort of, like, stylized version of romance and marriage. Like, people always say that on the internet of, like, oh, I just want a relationship like Marshall and Lily. Like, no, you don't, because that's...
No, God.
That's how children interact.
And, I know,
that's
yeah.
how dollies get married. You know, it's... Watching Friday Night Lights, you're like, yeah, that makes sense of the fact that obviously, they both love each other madly, and they both do anything for the other one, but both of them want these things, so they're both going to dig their heels in and just wait for the other person to break.
Yeah, and the moment when Tammy, in a way, gives in, you know, that she says, I'm never going to win this argument, that that quote and that moment, that understanding, it's in a way, it's kind of devastating because you're like, you can tell she's prepared to give up her dreams for her husband, for her family, for what, you know, even though she may not think it's the best thing for them, she realizes everyone else might, so she's willing to give that up. And it's this devastating thing, and the look on Coach's face at that moment, I realize I'm calling him Coach, but the look on Coach's face at that moment, it's so perfect, because it's this, you can tell he's got this intense conflict inside him of, like, do I let myself be the person who took away the dream of my wife just because, you know, it's more comfortable, it's more, you know, what we're used to, this is our quote-unquote home. It's a great scene, and it's a great admission of how things in real life work.
Yeah, because, I mean, because she says that, she's like, oh, I'm never going to win this fight. And then he says something like, yeah, okay. And then her face drops, and it's like, oh, well, maybe that was, like, as well, her last gambit of, like, well, what if I just say I give up, and maybe then he'll say, no, you're right, let's work it out. And he doesn't, and she's just like, well, I have to give up. But at the same time, no one's winning. Like, everyone feels like shit. And also, as well, I think they do, when that turns around and he sort of has the realization and he goes and sees her when she's taking pictures of Santa or whatever. And I thought that was a really sweet way. He's like, no, let's go to Philadelphia. And he's like, will you take me with you? And
I love that line.
Like, oh, that's gorgeous.
That is one of the best lines in the entire show. And not even just the line. The line's really good. But the reading by Kyle Chandler is so perfect. The, like, how quickly he gets through it. And he's like, he's rushing. He's like, please, please don't go. Please take me with you.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so perfect. And yeah, you're right. I mean, they have all this, like, drama and this, like, very heavy conversation where she kind of gives up, and it sets up that mall scene really nicely. I love that.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's interesting as well, and it was a bit, because usually in those situations, again, How I Met Your Mother and other TV shows, it's sort of like each person wants the thing they want, but the second it sort of gets to the point where it's romantic, whoever needs to gives up. But it was good, the fact that, you know, when they're talking to the kids about getting married and all that, and then Tammy leaves and the coach goes after her, and she just says, no, it's my turn. You know,
I love that.
Again, it's that sort of thing of, like, no, this is very realistic in the sense of, like, I mean, I've been quite lucky in not having to make that sort of decision. Like, when me and Fee had the thing of, like, where if we were going to move to England or Australia, it was never a decision. I was like, nah, Australia, perfect, awesome. You know, whereas there would have been couples who would have had that thing of, like, if I had, like, the massive amount of family that Fee has in England, and if my parents weren't going to move to Spain and stuff like that, we would have had to have a conversation where we chose which side of the globe we lived on, and it would have been like that. Of, like, well, yeah, how do we choose, and who gets to win? You know what I mean?
I know.
But do you ever do that? You know, like, as a married couple, you've got to think, well, it's not about winning or losing. It's about compromise. And as the coach says, you know, and I think they just depict that really well and really realistically without needing bells and whistles.
Yeah, I mean, just those little comments like Tammy saying 18 years when Saracen comes over to the house, like that little thing, which apparently was ad-libbed. That was not in the script, but apparently it was ad-libbed. That little moment, it's just like it's this... this admission of how long she's been dealing with, you know, his side of things, how long she's been kind of being secondary to his career and this, you know, lifestyle, this nomadic, you know, coach lifestyle.
It's like being an army wife, you know, just being
exactly.
Around. No, it's fascinating. It's I also liked as well, like that last episode, having it also opening with TV interviews.
I know. I love that it mirrored the pilot that way.
That was cool. And then I was having, like, at one point, Coach says to her, oh, you can get those his and hers closets that you've always wanted.
I loved that. And I was like, oh, I didn't even remember that they had made that callback.
Yeah, that's it. And they did that a few, like, there was a point where, Jesse Plemons, love Jesse Plemons.
Oh, the king.
Yeah, he was only in it briefly, but when he says to her, like, oh, God, you know, just a few years ago, we were trying to work out how to talk to Julie Taylor. And I was like, yeah, because they were in the burger place, and it was like they were trying to psych each other up to speak to her. And I was like, okay, so this is quite cool on the set, because doing it for this podcast, there's been a lot of that, like watching for obviously first and last episodes and how they mix together.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing of like, sometimes a show will definitely do a nice big, okay, here's a callback to the first episode. So you get that sort of reward of like, okay, if you've gone from first to last, like, and you've watched everything in between, this is our little moment of saying, like, yeah, yeah, we've been watching the show too. Don't worry, you know, we remember how things were.
Yeah,
and I thought
exactly.
This was really good, because it wasn't rammed down your throat. It was, like, little things of just like, yeah, remember the first episode of the show? This is the last episode of the show. It's a nice, the nice bookends. It works.
Yeah, it does. It does really well. And actually, you know, as someone who had never seen any other episode, I'm wondering, how did you feel about those new characters who were introduced? The you know, the Becky and Luke and the Vince and, God, I don't even remember his girlfriend's name. You know, Michael B. Jordan and his
Michael
girlfriend.
B. Jordan.
Oh, man, I literally have a note that just in all caps, Michael.B.Jordan, period, the king, stay the king.
Oh, okay, I've just got Michael B. Jordan, exclamation point. So
yeah, just like he is, and this was like so early on. I mean, people had seen him in The Wire before this.
He was
but
Wallace,
this was
wasn't he in The Wire?
Yeah, he was Wallace, exactly. So he was on that for one season, and then he comes and he does Friday Night Lights for two seasons, and then even just there, and I'm sure in that finale, you can see that star potential, just in that little bit you get from him.
Yeah, definitely. Even, like, you know, when he's, because he's doing, like, little quarterback speeches, and he's psyching people up. You're like, oh, this guy is just ace. Because we've got, interesting 2 points with Michael B. Jordan. The 10th episode of the podcast is the movie special. So we're going to, we're talking about Rocky. So we're going to talk about Creed as well as like, because the argument is, okay, Rocky is definitely the first Rocky film, but then the argument is, what's the last Rocky film? Is it Balboa or is it Creed? But we'll come to that later.
Yeah.
And interestingly, right now, the guy who he fights in Creed, like the real boxer, Tony Bello, is fighting right now in Liverpool, and he's fighting in Goodison Park where the end of Creed is filmed.
Oh wow!
So that's actually happening right now, and he is. It's billed as the true Rocky story. Tony Bello versus someone else, like, and yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, I'll probably talk about this more on Rocky. But having like the guy who Michael B. Jordan fights be from Liverpool, and all the little shots of Sylvester Stallone in Liverpool near where I used to work, pretty good. Pretty happy.
Yeah, I can only imagine how you know affecting that was for you specifically.
It was good. It must have been a nightmare to be in the cinema with me for that, because I was like, oh shit, what?
Like, I know that street.
I've been there. I'm from Liverpool.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah. Back to Friday Night Lights. No. So Michael B. Jordan. I mean, it's weird watching, you know, as it was happening, there were a lot of people who kind of tapped out when Coach moved away from the Panthers. They said, oh, he's not going to be with the Panthers anymore. Why do I care? I don't want to meet all these new characters. To me, I ride hard for the Lions. That is my squad. Okay. For whatever reason, I was like, I was so invested in him taking on that new team and kind of building them to become, spoiler alert, to become state champions, yeah. That, you know, I was so into it. And I think a big part of it was Michael B. Jordan. Like, he became such a strong presence and such easy to identify with character that you kind of can't help but get sucked in and be a part of this entirely new, and in a way it's kind of a spin-off, when he goes from the Panthers to the Lions, it becomes almost a different show.
Okay, well, yeah, that was obviously that, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand why the chief team had changed, but that was what it was.
Yeah.
The, like you say, the Becky, Mindy, Luke stuff, I couldn't work it out. I couldn't kind of like from the previously on, I knew that Tim had been in jail and now he wasn't.
Yeah.
And I could pick up the Saracen and Julie stuff very quickly. But right. And also as well, like from the previously on and just from the episode, the Michael B. Jordan thing was pretty much outlined. It was like, okay, single mother and the father's a deadbeat and he's the quarterback. Yeah. Cool, that's fine. And that was great. There were some really good scenes with that, like having the coach go in and throw the ticket on the pool table. And it not yeah, be like, a, it was like one line of dialogue. You know, which is like, know. You know, a boy waits his whole life to have an opportunity like this or whatever, and just walked out. And they didn't need the whole thing of like them like squaring off with each other, or, you know, you don't need to tell me how to raise my son or any of that bullshit. It was just like, just throws the ticket down, says his piece, and walks out. Like, okay,
yeah,
that's cool.
Now, one thing, like, we mentioned, you know, Kyle Chandler being, you know, so quiet and authoritative. Can you imagine that when they were casting this show, the Peter Berg and the guy who was the showrunner, Jason Kadams, they had to fight to get Chandler to be cast because the studio thought he was, quote, too light.
That's amazing. Because he's...
Right?
He's like watching a slow-motion car crash. You know, he's just all there, just all this stuff happening all at once, but like... You can't see it. Maybe not a slow-motion car crash, a slow-motion explosion or something. Like,
yeah.
It's all there, but you can't see it.
You know there's something there, and it's all... It's you just can't look away,
yeah.
And you're trying to get to whatever it is that is making you so wrapped up in it, and it's so subtle and so well-hidden that you don't know what it is, but you are in.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing as well, I sort of thought, like, looking at it and looking at the character of the coach, it's very interesting as well, like, in sort of current TV, to have a good guy as the lead character. You know, because we're so used to, like, Walter White, Don Draper, Tony Soprano, pretty much everyone on Game of Thrones. Just all the shows that are massive, they tend to have anti-heroes, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scandal and so on. It's like, oh, characters who are willing to blur the lines between good and right and wrong. Whereas I think for Coach Taylor, there is no line. There is no blurring of the line. It's you do good things or you do bad things, and he wants to do good things.
He does nothing but good things on the show. I don't think I can recall any moment on the show where thinking like, oh, Coach is really falling on by the wayside here. Oh, yeah. what's wrong with Coach? Like, the worst thing that he does is, you know, he takes too long to consider his wife's feelings about taking a new job and moving.
Yeah.
That's like the worst thing he does in the series.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, because there's not like, I think there was that big thing for a while of like, oh, if you were going to have a lead character in a show, they had to be morally duplicitous. It had to be a thing of like, oh, well, there has to be a scene at some point where they killed someone to protect themselves or whatever, and sort of like you had the downward spiral of guilt and grief. But it's interesting to just see this character who obviously everyone has enormous amounts of respect for, and he is a good guy, and he's a bit old-fashioned and he's quite conservative, but when he's talking to Michael B. Jordan and he says, you'll never know how proud I am of you, you're like,
oh my God.
That feels like a really real moment. And
yeah.
It feels as though if the coach said that to you, he means it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was just one of many very where moments where the room got very dusty for me, you know, got a little too invested there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not the only one. I can list my my top tear jerking moments if you like, but
please do.
Yeah, well, I mean, weirdly, the part that got me the most, and this probably doesn't have as big an effect for most other people, but for some reason it did, at the very end when they're doing the montage, the musical, and they're showing, you know, where everyone has gone in the last 8 months, the shot of Buddy, who you may not even know, Buddy Garrity, he's the big booster, he's like the gray hair, the big heavyset gray haired guy, where he's in the locker room and he's putting up the sign that says "Clear hearts, full clear eyes, full hearts can't lose." That got me so hard the first time, and there's no reason. It, like, just the look on his face where he's like, he's remembering Coach and he's so happy for everything. You can tell he's like, he's got this nostalgia for it, and it just killed me. I just couldn't go on.
That's I guess for me that obviously that I knew the line.
Yeah,
but it didn't really have the same sort of connotations. Like, for me, like, the first episode, I got really choked up in the last scene where he throws the ball and everything, and they scored the touchdown and went. In this one, the one I got choked up during was the coach saying he wants to go to Philadelphia, and like, will you take me with you? And I was like, oh god, that's just so gorgeous. It's such a good scene. Like, the final scene, I was like, when he throws the ball at the state finals and all that. Like, again, I had it in my notes. I didn't know if they were going to win or lose. And it was that sort of thing of, like, I don't... Like, obviously, you think, okay, it's the last episode. They've got to win. But at the same time, like, well, why do they have to win? Because you can have the thing of, like, they lose. And then you could end the show with it just being like, oh, well, the town's still really proud of them. And the next, you know... The season's going to start again, and it's that sort of idea of, you know, this just keep, it's a constant ongoing thing. But at the same time, you just really want to see them win. So when he throws the ball and you see every major character watching the arc of that, which is genius, like watching the arc of the ball. And I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen here. And I am completely, you know, at this point I'd watched what, 45, like an hour and a half of the show. Mm-hmm. In its entirety of, you know, a 76 episode show, and I was completely invested in it. I was like, I just really, really want this town to get a fucking win.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And I mean, that whole final sequence from essentially from the moment from the mall at the end of the of Coach and Tammy kind of reconnecting and making that decision, from the end of that until the very end credits, it's almost like this, I don't know, 12-minute, you know, short film, like tone poem. It's like so not story oriented.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's all kind of emotion and music. And we, oh God, we haven't even talked about the music, but it's so like effective the way they do that to me. Like, I know it's a lot of montages, but to me, I was like, I was just in. I just like, they realized that there was no talking that was going to get across the points they wanted to make. It was all going to be this emotion and images. And so I thought I was so impressed by the way they did that with that ending sequence.
Well, it was like, it's like a victory lap.
Yeah.
So like, the story was over when Coach said, yeah, take me to Philadelphia. Because up until that point, I was saying, like, the finale was like, the theme of the finale was love. It was just a lot of love. It was just characters telling each other that they loved each other, and whether they could be in love with each other and be together, or whether they loved each other and that was enough. Or, you know, like when you had, I think it's Tyra and Riggins, and he's talking about building the house, and she's got her dreams and he's got his dreams, and there's not a sense of like, oh, you should come live with me. It was just like, oh, well, you know, hopefully maybe those dreams will merge together. Like, oh, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous sentiment.
It's like they both realize, yeah, they're going in different ways, but they both have like this intense affection for each other. It's like the writers do a good job of that, and Riggins doesn't have to say much like for that to come across. Apparently the according to the Seppenwall book, the creators realized as the show went on, the less they gave Taylor Kitsch to say, the more effective he was.
Okay.
So they just started just boiling down his lines to the bare minimum, because just his presence was all you really needed.
Yeah, he's definitely like, for an 18-year-old or however old, he's just got like from the very first episode, he's world weary. You know, he's just like, like his opening thing of him like waking up on the couch and all the empty beer bottles, and then he shows up for practice drunk. So they do that punishment of when he's just in the center, just getting crashed, like just 18, bang, 82, bang, you know. And I think as well that for me was a great sort of part of the opener, which had been quite clunky of just like introducing people by name. But when you got that scene of like the players in a circle and you've got Riggins in the center and the coach is sort of saying like, he's saying his piece, but then you've also got Smash is saying his piece as well. And it's like, okay, there's a lot of character going on here. You've got the idea that Riggins is an outsider, and you've got this idea that this group of men, if the coach tells them to violently smash into another human being, they do it without question.
Yeah.
You know, he just has to say a number and smash.
Yeah, they're like, coach has that kind of hold over them. Mm. Whether that's, you know, just based on the overall feeling of football, the atmosphere of football, it's like you listen to the coach, or whether it's coach himself, it doesn't really matter. At that point, they're invested and they're in, and they will do whatever he says. And the Riggins stuff really drives that home. I love that.
Yeah, no, that was, and what was it? Oh yeah, so it was a lot of love. Oh yeah, yeah. So like you said, that those last scenes, and it was interesting as well when they get to the Cotton Bowl. Is it the Cotton Bowl?
Yeah, the big field. Yeah.
It suddenly stops being all washed out colors, handheld. It suddenly went then super stylized, and it was all like locked cameras and bright colors and like sweeping pans and all that. And I was like, oh, that worked really well, because it is the idea of, well, this is the real world, handheld cameras, grays, dark blues, you know, the camera moves where it wants to move, but the big game, well, that's the dream, that's heaven. Yeah. You know, and in heaven all the blocking is very good and the cameras stay static. Like,
I never even thought about that. I love that analogy, just the why things all of a sudden become, instead of really like small screen, why it becomes this widescreen thing during that ending. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's like, oh, they've gone beyond their little walls. Now they're reaching out into kind of the big real world, where things are, you know, crazy and out, and you know, bright lights, big city in a way.
it absolutely is
like they've reached the pinnacle, and it that moment you're like, oh, this is their dream.
Yeah,
this is everything they've wanted.
And that's it. And I think it did play with my emotions, but like when they throw the ball and then the next minute some random player catches it.
And I know.
I was like, oh, and my first thought was like, oh shit, is this going to be, in my head, like, oh God, for some reason I thought, is this going to be a flashback to like, an early, like when like the coach first started, and it was just going to sort of show how far he'd come, and we were never going to find out. And I was like, no, that's insane. So as soon as like I realized it was Philadelphia, I was just looking at everyone's hands. I was like, where's this? Have they got the ring? Have they got the state ring? Come on, you know, and then I think it's Michael B. Jordan, you see him catch a ball and he's just got the massive state champion ring. I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I love that touch. They're like, yeah, we got to show someone with the ring. Let's put it on the quarterback in the middle of practice. He's throwing with this like gigantic ring on his hand. It's like, come on, that's not real, but you know, whatever. I'll give you a pass because I get it.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be throwing off your weight, really, when you're throwing the ball. I don't know anything about being a quarterback, I guess.
Well, I imagine he's not throwing many tight spirals with like 24 carats of diamonds hanging off his middle finger.
You'd think so. Well, you'd hope so. Otherwise, he's a much better player than we give him credit for.
Yeah, that's.
Let me see if else have I got in my notes. Anything else that you'd like to add?
So, nothing big. I mean, the big thing that I mentioned, the music throughout the entire show, the music was so good. And, you know, kind of the feeling of the show was really based on this band from Texas. And oh God, now I'm blanking on the name of the band. Hold on. Let me find out. You can edit this part out.
Maybe we'll see.
Oh, Explosions in the Sky, from this band Explosions in the Sky. All of that like twangy guitar, guitar kind of melancholy music, it's all from that one band, and they used it in the movie too, and it sets the stage so well. And I was actually happy that in the finale you got to see the opening credits, which were one of my favorite sets of opening credits of any show, just because it sets the tone and mood of the show so well. Mm. And it uses that same kind of music. And so the music of the show was always a huge thing to me. And especially in that finale, they really went overboard.
But no, in terms of, say, like looking at it from first to last, it doesn't look like from my, obviously having not watched it, it doesn't look like the show goes on like a wild, it doesn't become wildly different. I think it kind of stays true to that. Because one thing that has been interesting with this, obviously watching so many pilots, is there's mm-hmm. so many shows that like you see the pilot and it's like, oh, this is good, but it's half cooked. You know, it's not, yeah. it's not quite there. I mean, watching the like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer pilot, we were sort of like, yeah, they're not quite there yet. A lot of the pieces are there, but they're just not in the right places. And then watching the X-Files one, you're like, oh no, they instantly knew what they were doing here. They had it completely yeah. wired. And I definitely felt like with watching the last episode, watching the first episode, and there not being a huge amount of changes, it was, mm-hmm. they had sort of locked in how they wanted the show to look, what the sort of tone was, and quite a lot of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a pilot, just to watch this, I would tell people who, if they said to me, oh, I never want to watch Friday Night Lights, I would say to them, watch the pilot then. Just watch that one episode. It's 45 minutes. It's like a short film. You get a strong beginning, middle, and end. It's themes for days. Very good-looking people. Great dialogue. You can watch that and sort of walk away and have a satisfied feeling. It isn't one of those pilots that's like, oh yeah, we've got this show, but you're going to have to give us a series if you want to know more. It's sort of like, it's more of a sense of like, no, this is what we can do. This is, you know, we know how to start something, we know how to middle it, and we know how to end something. If you give us 76 episodes, we'll give you that, you know, week by week.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, if I was telling someone, just watch that first episode. If you're not in, you're not in. I understand it. There's a lot going on that a lot of people, may not be all about. But if you watch that first episode and you're like, oh, I like that, just you're gonna love the series, yeah. guaranteed. Like, you just keep watching after that.
I think I may sort of like, I've got a busy schedule of TV watching.
Yeah, you got a lot.
But I will sort of.
Oh yeah, it's a busy schedule of sitting on your ass.
Yeah, that's it. My busy sitting on my ass schedule. Oh, it's tough.
I know.
Have you read or heard of the comic book Southern Bastards?
I've heard you talk about it. I have not actually read it. Tell me about it a little bit.
So what it is, it's set in Crow County, Alabama, mm-hmm. and it's sort of quite. Watching Friday Night Lights, it definitely reminded me of it in the sense of, like, Southern Bastards is like an evil version of Friday Night Lights.
Ooh.
Like, the big bad guy is the coach, and the team are all his, like, drug dealers and soldiers and shit like that, and, like, a good man comes into town and so on. And it's written and drawn by two, like, you know, good old boys from, you know, Alabama and Kansas, I think. And they, they really get into, like, sort of like how shitty the South is.
Yeah, for sure. And this show definitely showed that a lot, especially in the pilot with that dinner or that celebration scene at the car dealership where Coach is getting accosted by by the boosters, and they're telling him, you know, you got to win this or you're fucked. Like, it's very interesting to watch. Oh, side note, the guy who's accosting him and telling him you're fucked was the head coach of the University of Texas football team.
I did put that in my note of like, imagine if every conversation was like that, like every time, because it's almost like Tammy being like a coach's wife, it's like being the first lady, you know, you sort of you're a ceremonial role, aren't you, and you've got those like mm-hmm. two women that are like, come to our book club and we'll drink sweet tea and wine and talk about books. You're like, ugh, what a nightmare. And then, like you say, coach is just like, oh, we don't want to see a throwing game. We want to see, you know, and you're like, dude, just, you're not the coach. I'm the fucking coach. Take it outside. You know, I don't need you telling. But I guess that would just be your life all the time. Just like old players who, like, you know, would always be flashing their state championship rings or like the fathers of players.
Yeah, family, just hanging out, like trying to be a part of the team and trying to like catch some of that reflected glory, you know?
That's it. I mean, that sort of lifestyle is. I actually, it's funny, I did think that thing of like high school football and like the football team, or even just high school sport, I guess, and the particular sport, like running a town, that's mm-hmm. something that I don't really have any, not connection with, but like, we don't have it in England. You know, you don't really have a soccer team that runs, like an English football, a football team that runs a town. Whereas when I moved to Australia, going to like my wife's hometown, like little town 2 hours north of Melbourne, that is very much like there, like the Aussie rules football and the netball is such a huge part of like the town's makeup. Everyone is somehow connected. Like at one point, Fiona's brother played for the team, her sister-in-law played for one of the teams, her other sister-in-law was an umpire, her dad's butcher shop sponsored the team, and her mom worked in like the canteen during the matches. Like she'd be like selling drinks and giving out pies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which was great because obviously we'd just be there just hanging around the house, and then she'd come home from the footy match and she'd have like, oh, does anyone want 9 million sausage rolls and 8 cans of beer? Like, yes, please.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm in.
Well, why are you even, how long have you known me? Just give it to me and don't make eye contact. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I thought the show did such a good job of painting that from the very first episode, of making that clear that this town of Dillon is the football team. That is the town. Everything else is secondary. And you know, when the game is being played and everyone shuts their doors, all the businesses are closed, and that stays through all the way until the end. And they did such a good job of making that town real, even though it's not a real place.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is that interesting, because like I said, going back to just like the pilot as a structural thing as well, of like going, okay, so the show is called Friday Night Lights, so you know the football game's Friday. So mm-hmm. the first title card is Monday. You're like, okay, yeah. Cool. So, and you get that day by day thing of like, Monday's a certain kind of training, Tuesday something else. Wednesday was when they had like, I think the quarterback was training like the Pee Wee team.
Oh God, and yeah, that scene, I remember that.
Yeah, and they had the little prayer session, and the guy's like, Street, do you think God likes football? I think everybody likes football. And I was like, what am I watching? This is amazing.
I know, it was so good. I was like, all right, no kid would actually say that, but I'm in, I don't care.
Yeah, I was like, it's so good because it's so, I think it is interesting, like, living in sort of cynical times, like, how sincere the show is. Like, it's very hard, like, watching, I didn't realize about all the religious stuff. I didn't really think about that. But it was such a huge part of it. Like, when the game ends and everyone's cheering, but then both teams and coaches and everything go into the center of the circle and they all bow their heads and they have a little prayer session. I was like, okay, this is... Like, religion makes me uncomfortable, but this is interesting, like, to just see how casual it is. You know what I mean? It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, oh, look, oh, they're super religious. We need to mock them or we need to support them. It was just like, no, this is, get into it. This is the makeup of where you are in the world at this point. You are in West Texas.
It was just a fact of nature, and the show tried to paint that. They're like, look, we can't, like, whether we agree with it or not, no matter what we may think about religion, it's a part of their life. And that is evidence from the very first episode. Actually, episode 2 opens with them at church.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, it's very, it's present, but it's never preachy. It's just like, this is a part of these people's lives. And so we're going to present these people's lives as realistically as possible, because everything we do on the show is going to be as real and as natural as possible.
It's very brave in a sense, like trying to do a show that's that sincere and sort of not, they don't undercut it. Like for both episodes watching it, there wasn't sort of a thing of like, everyone like respected the coach, but there wasn't a sense of like they were begrudgingly doing it. You know, he had, you know what you were saying before about them battering Riggins, and you're like, oh, is that just the nature of football, or is that their respect for the coach? And you don't, as the show goes on, or the bits I saw, you're like, no, they just have respect for this guy because he's a good guy who has their best interests in heart. And I think that's interesting thing.
Yeah, over time, especially as the show goes on, as a viewer, I was like, I want this guy. I wish this guy was my dad. I wish he or at least, you know, maybe like a really paternalistic uncle, something like that. You know, like I want him in my life. I just want him to be a part of my life so I can draw some of his wisdom and be, you know, enlightened by his character.
Yeah, no, I think it is interesting. Like, do these things, like, these characters, do they actually exist in real life, or is that it? Are we just like Are we a generation of men raised by TV dads? Which is a whole thing, and I think that ends up with me starting a fight club.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if it's this TV dad, if it's Coach Taylor, then I think we'll all be fine.
Yeah, well, I wanted Walter White to be my dad, because I'm after that paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, yeah, I think there's nothing more to say about Friday Night Lights. I think we've totally dissected the show down to the bones.
I think so, yeah. Thank you for having me on. I truly appreciate it.
No, it's great, and it was a fantastic show, and definitely it was one I wouldn't have probably... I don't know whether it ever would have come around that I would have watched it. I think it would have always been sat on my Netflix list until it didn't. You know what I mean?
You needed that push. I'm glad to give you that push.
Yeah. I mean, because there are tons of shows that you just think to yourself, yeah, one day I'll watch X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
Like, I work with a dude who's never watched Game of Thrones and he's never watched Breaking Bad. And I'm like, dude, you've got to get on that. And he's like, yeah, I will, I will, I will, I will. And every week I just sort of say to him, so, you know, Breaking Bad. And he's like, yeah, you know, but I've got other things I need to watch. I was like, no, because you watch House of Cards, so shut that down.
Oh, God.
Get Breaking Bad.
Yeah, get that garbage out of your system. Yeah. Start watching something that's not going to make you stupid. And
put that trash aside.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been interesting, actually, with this being the first one that I hadn't seen anything of, because... Pretty much every person who I've spoken to about guesting on the show has said to me, oh, you know, I want to do whatever. I want to do Buffy, or I want to do Futurama, or I want to do this. And then they always ask, oh, can I pick a show that I've never seen before? Or can I pick a show that you've never seen before? And like, yeah, fill your boots. And no one's been quite brave enough to choose a show that they haven't seen. But you,
I would love to.
Yeah, but I mean, you were at least to say, when I said, oh, no, I've never seen Friday Night Lights, you were like, oh, well, now you're going to watch it. Get it in your ass.
Now you have to.
Yeah. Which is, it's going to be interesting. At some point, someone is going to say, okay, and they're going to pick a show. I'm waiting for the point where someone picks a show that I haven't seen and they haven't seen, and we just muddle through an hour of conversation based on a show we've seen, an hour and a half of, and just see how far that takes us.
Yeah, just... All you know is how they started and how they ended and nothing in between. I like that. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think someone's definitely going to do it sooner or later.
That's cool.
Okay, so where can people find you, or can people find you, or do you want people to find you?
Sure, yeah. I was actually torn about that. But yeah, go ahead. Add me on Twitter. It's at John B. Dugan.
There you go.
B as in boy.
Perfect. And John comments a lot about football? Me?
A lot about most of my Twitter. I haven't tweeted a lot lately, and maybe this will get me enough followers. I feel I need to, but mostly it's TV, movies, and sports stuff. Yeah,
there you go. So that's very fitting for a fan of Friday Night Lights.
Exactly.
As usual, you can find me at First to Last Pod on Twitter, or you can email me at fromfirsttolastpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch if you want to guest on the show. There's still, you know, infinite shows left to choose from. If you go on the Twitter now, I'm sort of listing shows that we haven't done yet, so you can always sort of pick one of those out. Other than that, John, thanks for coming on, mate.
Absolutely. Clear eyes, full hearts.
God. Okay. My name has been Sean Fallon. This has been From First to Last. Goodbye.